group teenage pregnancy, there's the over 16 and the under 16. But in terms of how we deal with it monetarily, I don't know if I'm qualified to comment on that.
Do you want to roll on, Ivan?
Yeah, I don't want to get into that particular issue. I'm not an expert.
Okay.
I mean, I think.
Sorry, there's a, I know normally the team members are not around for follow-up questions,
Honourable Member. So there are products that are available to amongst which ARVs which are given to people who are not infected as a way of reducing their chances of being infected. I think we have a number of exposure prophylaxis. So for example, among sex workers, there is actually a summer run program as we move in fact towards legalizing sex work in the country. That's one of the big issues in the HIV AIDS sector, to legalize sex work. But SANAC has been funded, for example, by the Global Fund to provide some interventions, and that's one example of that. In fact, there have also been studies done with men who have sex with men, who also, because they are at high risk of infection, the idea is also to give them these ARVs as a way of bringing down the infection rate. There have been suggestions, maybe these are controversial, that since one age group which we still have some problem with, because they still are being infected at the greatest rate among 15 to 24. These are young women, girls and young women, that perhaps they could also be given that. But of course that's very controversial. There is no initiative I'm aware of which actually is trying to do that. But rather the prevention group is what is being proposed. That rather they become more empowered, particularly to withstand the pressure from the black side. So there are programs targeting young women, particularly addressing that issue. So those are some of the interventions. It's really a preventative product, you could say, that there are programs targeting young women to really be themselves and not fall for older men who come after them. Finally, there have been other studies where they've tried, just like we are talking about grants, social grants for pregnancy, that in fact for young girls to remain in school, that everything should be done by giving them a kind of grant which encourages them to stay in school, because they're finding that has been reported widely is that those who remain in school basically have a lower chance of becoming infected, because they are focusing on school rather than the other world we see. So those are some of the interventions. I don't know if my colleagues listen to us to that.
I think for the other products I'm trying, I'm still in clinical trial level, the capsules and the microbicides and the gels are still, we put them in phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 trials at different levels. The trials are still running, so there aren't those products. I mean, clinically, say, this is about the 98 prevention to use the products as well as the
thank you, Chairperson. My section is on the economy. Overall assessment. I am very worried on the fact there is a shift in the approach from counter-cyclical spending. There is an observation that the slow down in spending. Are we already in austerity like Greece? Are we getting somewhere there? Are you getting the impression that what the departments are doing now is actually putting us in implementing austerity measures like what is promoted by the IMF? And the other one is I would like maybe in the future to know more about the effect of the spatial development. Have we not done enough since 1994 in improving that space of development? And how much does it affect our desire for dealing with equality and inequality in the country?
Thanks very much. Let me just respond to there were a couple of other questions, and I'll come onto your question. You had a question about the Northern Cape versus Limpopo tax revenue raise. I don't know if you are ready. We can go back a couple of slides further on. Next one? Mm-hmm. Are you going the wrong way? Okay. The diagram with its circles. That's it.
Yeah.
So you could see, so this is the bottom set of circles, which is an important one. Northern Cape is third from the left. That is per capita, so per person living in the Northern Cape. Rather than the total amount you'll see on the top one is Northern Cape is very small. So it's actually the total amount that it contributes in tax is very small, because it's a very small economy, not many people live there. Per capita, it makes a disproportionate contribution. I don't really know the reason. I suppose it's something to do with there's a slightly higher rate of employment. More people there have jobs who live there. And secondly, that the kinds of jobs are slightly better paid than in the bubble. Maybe there is more mining jobs that are relatively well paid. And fewer farming, so that could be the explanation. But I don't really know the answer, but those are two obvious reasons for it. The second question I wanted to address was on the flush toilets issue that you also raised, because I think it's a very interesting one, and I think what the evidence is suggesting, which is very positive, is that flush toilets help people to perform better at school. Okay. Having basic services helps people to have a better living condition, which means they can study harder, and they perform better at school. Now, this is a really important point for all sorts of reasons, because it fits in with what I was saying about progression. Because what we have to do is to get a bigger bang for the buck for public spending. We've got to get our public services working together more effectively. So it's not separate sanitation, water, electricity, schools, health. The whole thing must be a package that helps people to develop, right? That helps people to get better education, that will lead to jobs, that will lead to better jobs over time, decent work. Right, that's the logic of development, progression. So it really is better getting public services working more effectively together. So I think that's a really good piece of evidence. And we as researchers also need to think in a more joined up way. So we make the connections between health and education and employment to see whether these things are working effectively. Like social grants. We want the social grants to help people to get jobs. Right? So my understanding is that there is some evidence that social grants help one member of the family to migrate from the rural area to Gauteng. Right? Because people pool together to afford to send somebody to live in the city. Social grants also help, I understand, with paying for some childcare to help some women to go out for a job. So there could be ways in which we need better understanding of how these social services, these welfare services, help to develop people and the economy. The third part of what maybe is about the appointments issue that you raised is obviously a really sensitive issue and very, very hard to research, to get hard evidence about how those appointment recruitment decisions are being made. You hear lots of anecdotes, lots of stories, we all hear about them, you know, pay the deployment, putting it crudely, but we don't really know, and I'm not aware of evidence, hard evidence, so we'll think harder about that, but it's a tough subject to research. Now coming to your questions, I think we are entering a period, my understanding is entering a period of austerity. You do see real cuts in budgets in various places, particular kinds of budgets, and in particular municipalities and provinces. But we're not on the scale, nothing like the scale of Greece. All right, so we need to be careful about these comparisons. But it is a different, very, very different situation now. And it is austerity. That's subject to discussion exactly what you mean by austerity. But the way that the previous finance minister described it was that we cutting the growth in public spending. In other words, we're not growing the budget the way we were before. We're not actually experiencing overall a real reduction in the total spending. And I think we're seeing reductions in some. Human settlements, I think, has had a big hit this year, right? And the biggest hit of all the departments, from my reading of the appropriations bill. So it's selective, it's not across the board. You know, tightening the belts here and there, hopefully that will be enough and the economy will recover, but it's a very uncertain situation we're in. And your second question about spatial development, I think we definitely haven't done enough about spatial development. And there are several things I want to particularly mention. Okay, so what's emerging from this story that we're now doing work on, quite a lot of work, is that Gauteng is quite a remarkable relative success story. Right? And the way we have, in Gauteng we've got growth, in Gauteng we've got progression, the things I'm talking about. We've got some evidence we're looking at which shows that people have a much better chance of getting a job and getting a better job over time. We've got this data that tracks people over the last 6 years. Real progression is happening much more effectively in Gauteng than anywhere else in the country. Right? It's acting as a kind of escalator. So people get onto that, and then their lives are improving in all sorts of ways. Right? Much more effectively than the rest of the country. So what seems to me that system in Gauteng is working better. Obviously they have many problems still with the protests and congestion and sort of big unemployment has worked better than elsewhere. What we need to do is to find ways of that system working more effectively. So that's why I'm a little bit nervous about transferring the resources from Gauteng to the rest of the country. I think we need to be ensuring that those informal settlements in the townships in Gauteng work better. The schools in Gauteng work better. The health service works better. So it's reinforcing the success of that system that's happening in Gauteng. That's, I think, a key message that I want to put across. rather than diverting resources from there, we've got to address the congestion, we've got to address the bottlenecks in infrastructure, because the things are working better there. It's just the social system, the economic system. We must reinforce that success for inclusive growth rather than penalize it.
So in chapter 5, I suppose the one on the SOE. On the SOE, you know, as a committee, we did identify the fact that a lot of departments' budgets get transferred to SOE. And we have a feeling that we don't think the departments are hands-on on actually monitoring the spending of the grants that they have transferred either to the SOE or to the municipality. And we suspect that a lot of the evil is that is in that transfer to SOE and municipalities, which we think as committees maybe we are not supervising enough. Do you think it is possible to have a research of all the SOEs, how they function, those that should be closed down, that we don't need, or those that should be clubbed together, something like that, so that as Parliament we have got the ability to actually oversee them effectively.
This you can see ESCOM is now giving us some kind of energy stability. So there is a bit of rationale, although we need to be able to we need to do a better observation of what ESCOM is doing. For instance, the session of the power station has long been for good or bad, has not been done. So they are not necessarily the best, but at least you could argue that we are using only to a discipline extent, because now we at least we have the security of race. But then about the other, it's not clear exactly what you are going to name. Give an example of trucks like this. Some 5-6 years back, they were sitting in 300 billion on infrastructure, and they were given the mandate to revitalize rail across the country so that you could ease pressure from the road to rail. That has not happened.
That committee is supposed to have looked at
a number of issues relating to SOEs, and they recommended drill-down in terms of research. So there were a number of issues, but the most important ones were the effectivity of the SOE, the efficiency of the SOE, its strategy, whether it's in line with government development, and its financial viability. So if you go into the SOE domain and you look at these things, it would be easy enough to determine whether this is worthwhile or not. So, you know, there's this restructuring initiative that is really needed. And somehow we need to see how we get a value add from these entities. Some of them are profit making, others are not. But I think the largest one, you know, a lot of money goes into these entities, and we need to see something coming out that's of value to every single South African. So I think this investigation into efficiency, effectivity, strategy, and financial viability would be a good one. I'm not sure you would do that.
So I'll tell you why we are asking you. We have to begin to focus on the authority and we want to tell them what the authority and how to fund it. And where all the money is gone, it's waiting for 5 years. Because we are not seeing the outcome.
We'd be happy to do that.
We'd
be happy to do that
analysis.
We would need a brief. We would need a brief from a committee with an understanding of terms of reference on the ranking. We'd be very, very happy to do that.
We will do that.
Which was one of the things that I wanted to just comment on, because I was asking too many. So I wanted to just comment on this, because I saw somewhere that it seems that they need additional resources, and I wanted to actually to say that what we know is that it was in terms of government reform. We are not convinced as a committee that what they need is additional resources, because the story that we are always receiving is that poor government, they are poorly run, not really, it's not really about the resources, but it's about the manner in which, because it seems that these people, there is a little mention of some of the things for the challenges, but what we always get is that there's poor government, poor financial management, and poor systems in most of them. So I want to just add now that we're discussing
especially because now, and in fact this is the role we should adopt with this, that of helping government try to promote development and economic growth, employment, reducing food, and so on. And then just are not coming to the party. Yeah, they have money. Although for a few from the own question.
I think that's very relevant.
Yeah.
I think that was the role of the SOE society to represent the driving future development in the country hasn't happened before. It would be very important to find out why, and also to look at the current legislation and to see where you can find out on that legislation.
Because that's also the type of public education. He wants to then be a public education. Yeah, and it's a very loose kind of arrangement. Ministers have absolutely very limited control over the economy. Yet they are not yet happy. So that also is a very interesting kind of relationship between
and the implement.
Right, if we can include the, what do you call them? These people who have got a lot of money and they don't want to have education. What do you call these people?
So the sitters?
Yeah, the sitters, yeah.
That's a lot of money.
You know, I am told by reliable sources that those people have got money. And I think we should zoom into that. In this budget, actually, we should allow nobody who gets money from the people to get a little better. I see the department are not doing anything, but we are parliament. We've got the ability to call them on an ongoing basis. On condition we've got correct information to nail them down. This budget, really, I'm serious. It's got to work for the country, not for playing games. No,
okay. I don't know whether I still want to respond to some of the issues.
I'm sure Angela answered the question, Chair, but I think that is this really interesting question that was raised about engineers. I wonder between Ivan and Angelique, you want to say something about engineers not working in their areas of training?
I think Angelique raised some of the issues here. So one shouldn't expect every graduate to automatically and straight away move into the career path that is suggested by the area of study, because real life isn't like that. You know, individuals, they change their mind. There aren't any jobs available. As Angelique said, we are in a context of very high employment. They can't get a job in the place that they live, and so they choose something else, maybe temporarily, with a view that maybe in a year or two's time they've got a bit of other experience that might move into that. So one shouldn't expect a complete 100% correspondence. Everything people study there. However, there were some pretty glaring gaps in those figures, and I'm not on top of that data myself, so it does raise some questions. I don't know whether you want to, because you don't want to obviously invest massive resources training doctors, engineers, and lawyers, and so on. And then, you know, they're not ending up in these careers. That's a terrible wastage. Because some will go abroad. That's another area of wastage. So one has to try and plan the system better, but also realizing that we're dealing with individuals who exercise choice at the end of the day.
Bearing that all in mind, I mean, the department has put in a lot of effort through the Labour Market Intelligence Partnership to try and understand better the drivers of skill supply and the drivers of skill and labour market demand and how they relate to each other. Because if you have a very weak correlation between the kinds of skills that are produced and what is demanded in the labour market, it is seen as a signal of system failure. Yes, we do not want very high levels of mismatch, but again, as Posturak has indicated, the notion of mismatch is not entirely such an easy construct to deal with. But what is very much at hand is that we do need to engage with whether that might represent a wastage in the system or not. And we do need to be getting people in occupations to a proportion that is acceptable in terms of their training. But, I mean, the main baseline story will always be, it doesn't matter in which area we're training, we just need more people with more skills in the country. That's a necessary parameter.
And more jobs.
And more jobs, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chancellor.
experience with a very small program in the space road and the good part of the project and the future.
There's a lot of work that has been done in, that is being done in that area now, on the sea that is forming that landscape.
But also on the sea that, have a look at this mission.
Yeah.
Thank you.